Dogs make the best companions for humans. This podcast aims to help make humans better companions for their dogs. Welcome to the Beru Podcast, a modern lifestyle podcast for dogs and their people. I'm your host, Charlotte Bain. I've been caring for other people's dogs for more than 15 years. And while I've learned a lot in my career, I definitely don't know it all. So I've collected an ever-evolving roster of amazing dog people, and I learn new things from them all the time. Hi, you guys. Thank you so much for joining me for this episode of the Beru Podcast. We all know that a good workout can do wonders for our own health, but the same is true for our pets. And in this episode, Dr. Lori McCauley joins us to chat about all the ways exercise can benefit our pups, from their muscles to their minds, and how we can help them avoid injury and support and be proactive in our pups' health as they age. We also touch on the importance of the emerging field of energy medicine and its role in veterinary care. So let's just jump into the chat. So is your dog's name Oliver? Is that what you said?
Yes.
I love that name for a dog.
Wow. And he's 14 and he's like standing at the far end of the yard going,
No, that's okay.
Good job, buddy. Thank you. There we go. Now I don't have to worry about him because it's rainy and cold outside.
Oh, yeah. You want him to stand out there and just stay there forever. Right. You say he's 14. Right. What kind of puppy is he?
He's a Mastiff Cross.
Oh, my gosh. And he's 14. Good job. Well, yes, you're a longevity expert, so that makes sense. That's fantastic. Oh, how lucky.
So yeah, I lost my dachshund at 18 and a half a couple years ago.
Oh, I love it. So, I'm not too familiar with dachshunds, but I've been noticing there's been a lot of the long-haired dachshunds in my neighborhood lately. They're so cute. Is there a specific difference between those two? Like, are they different variations of the breed, obviously, but...
So there's minis, which are like 10 pounds and under.
Okay.
There's the regular ones that were bred to hunt the badgers, which are like 15 to 30 pounds.
Okay.
And there's tweenies, which are the ones that are in between.
Got it.
And they have different personalities. And then in each set, you can have different coat colors. And so there's a lot of variation.
Got it. Was your guy in betweenie or was he a?
No, he was a mini. He was only 8 pounds.
Oh, cute. Well, thanks you two for popping on. And Dr. Lori, I'm very excited to meet you. Dr. Heather, who I've been doing rehabilitation with my own dog, who is going to be 16 next month. I've been seeing her since he was like 7 years old when he was diagnosed with osteoarthritis. And she is one of the, I think it's 80% of why he's still moving and grooving and trucking along so well is because of our continuous work with her. So you are like the pioneer of veterinary rehabilitation and physical therapy, which I think a lot of people don't even think about when it comes to their pets, unless perhaps they have some sort of like major injury that they need to rehabilitate from, right? A torn ligament or something like that. Do you want to introduce yourself to my listeners and tell us a little bit about you?
So I'm Dr. Lori McCauley. I graduated from vet school in 1992. I did 6 years of regular practice. Fell down the stairs at 3 o'clock in the morning, put my dogs out, of course. Yeah. I hurt my back. My chiropractor couldn't fix me. I went to the orthopedic surgeon who said, you need to go see a PT. And it was like a light bulb went off. And I went, oh my God, this is so cool. This is what I want to do for dogs. And said, I'll take a course. And of course, there were no courses at the time. Right. So I went, I did some research with a large hospital that had a human PT on staff that was just doing a little bit of work. And we did some research together, and then I opened up the world's first rehab center for dogs. Wow. I designed the first underwater treadmill. I've been blessed to be able to write multiple chapters for textbooks and articles. I've lectured all over the world. I have, let's see what else. I taught the rehab certification course. I was one of the main instructors for 14 years. I've had interns from 17 countries. I love, love, love teaching. And my mission in life is empowering people to help their pets.
Great.
So whether it be veterinarians that I'm helping, technicians, pet parents, every time I help somebody help their pet, it fills my cup and warms my heart.
That's fantastic. And Dr. Lindsay, you were just mentioning, I think, that you took one of her courses recently. Did I get that correct?
I did. Yeah. She offered a kind of almost like a miniature, we call them wet labs or a hands-on laboratory during the last Holistic Veterinary Medical Association conference. And I also have known Dr. Heather for years, and she has sung your praises since I've met her. So I was very excited and honored to have the opportunity to be able to learn from you.
Thank you. I love, 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 because I think about it like the ripple effect, right? I help you and you help pet parents, and then they help their dogs, or you help their dogs. And I'm just so blessed that I have that ability and that opportunity.
Well, thank you for all that you do and all that you've accomplished. My guy wouldn't be moving and grooving if it wasn't for you and all of your work. So I really appreciate it and thank you. And I wanted to talk about one of the things you often talk about is the importance of exercise for our pets. And mm-hmm. I think when we think about exercise, we automatically think of like running, you know, or like fast walking. What does that look like? What is the importance of exercise look like? And what does exercise look like in your eyes for our pets?
So, you know, if you think about exercise in humans, mm-hmm. right? So we have something to compare it to. You've got your marathon runners mm-hmm. who can run, but then you ask them to lift something heavy and they can't.
Right.
And then you've got your, what I call gym rats, right? The people who are out at the gym yeah. 5 days a week, they're really built, yeah. but you ask them run and they're out of breath immediately, right? So there's different types of muscle fibers in our bodies, and it's the same with dogs. Mm-hmm. So there's two important sides of that. We want to be able to increase endurance, whether it be heart, lungs, and the muscles. Mm-hmm. And then we also want to increase strength. And we increase strength to decrease the chance of injury. And believe it or not, those two things, the runner and the person who is doing different exercises and building the type 2 muscle fibers, that actually affects the brain as well. Mm. So I'm going to go for a walk. I'm going to walk my dog. I'm going to swim my dog. I'm going to run my dog. That actually increases the number of neurons in their brain. I'm going to learn something new. I'm going to lift weights. I'm going to do new tricks. I'm going to do that kind of stuff. Increases the life expectancy of each neuron in their brain. So by comparing the two, by doing the endurance exercises and the targeted exercises, we actually increase cognitive function in the dog. We increase endorphins so that they're happier, they're less stressed. There's so many things that we can help with. We can decrease the chance of metabolic issues. A bunch of Canadian physicians have a statement out that says that exercise is the largest underutilized tool for controlling pain associated with arthritis in humans, right? So we take that and bring that into our pets. So many of our dogs are on supplements or medications, and that's great. Mm-hmm. But if we can strengthen the muscles, tendons, and ligaments around the joints, mm-hmm. we can potentially get them off of things that may have side effects, mm-hmm. As well as cost, and get them doing fun things that increases their bond with their owner, increases their happiness. Literally, there's tons of research that shows that exercise increases longevity. So we're just talking a little bit off air about, you know, having our pets live a long time. Mm-hmm. Exercise is a big part of that.
And this is something that we should just implement from the get-go. Like, how does it change as they age, right? Like, how does it, the level of exercise and the kind of exercise, because there's so many different things. You're talking about strength training. How do we do strength training with our dogs, right? I can't see my dog lifting mini weights. I wish this was on video, but.
So my dog, Sid, who usually he's next to me now, usually he's behind me. He literally came to me with straight knees, straight shoulders, and a long back. Right. And I'm a rehab mom. So I looked at him and go, you're not going to have a cruciate injury. I will not allow you to have a shoulder injury. You're not going to have a back injury or an iliopsoas injury. Mm-hmm. So I put together an exercise program for him to help strengthen and support all of that stuff. And then I shared it with friends of mine. Mm-hmm. And one of my friends who actually lives in Chicago, so 1,000 miles away, wrote back and said, oh my God, Lori, Sophia is a different dog. She's a competitive agility dog. And I think we started when she was like 10, 9 and a half. And she's like, I thought my dog was strong. She does herding. So she does all the running sports, right? She does obedience. She does the agility. She's like, my dog is probably 3 pounds. This is a small Sheltie, 3 pounds heavier, and it's all muscle, mm-hmm. right? And at 11, she was the 7th fastest Sheltie in agility in the bad dog agility. So everybody else is like 4, 5, and 6. And mm-hmm. at 11, she was in the top 10,
wow,
which is just amazing. She's like, Lori, you need to share this with others. And that's why I created Core and More. The exercise
program. And Core and More is your exercise program. Is that something that's available for pet parents too?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. Oh, great. I didn't know that.
Yep. Core and More foundational exercises for your dog.
Okay.
And you can get on my website, optimumpetvitality.com, and it's right there.
Okay. So here's my question. Well, some of my questions is, how do we know if we're, A, if our dog is getting enough exercise, and B, if we're pushing our dog too hard to get exercise, right?
Excellent questions. Yeah. So facial expressions.
Okay.
Right. So when we look for signs of fatigue, uh-huh. and I don't want to push it, but it's all in the course, right? Signs of fatigue are ears that are perk ears will come back and then down. A tail that's what they call a gay tail that comes across the back mm-hmm. will actually unravel and come down. So signs of stress, signs of fatigue, mm-hmm. heavy panting, mm-hmm. right? So dogs don't sweat. They literally cool themselves off by panting. Mm-hmm. And when a dog starts to overheat, their tongue will flatten out. So it has a larger surface area. They'll pant and you'll watch their head move. Literally, because they don't want to breathe in the hot air. They just breathed out. Mm-hmm. Their eyes will dilate.
Oh, is that why they do that? Because I do. When they're panting and they're moving, they move around a lot. Interesting. I did not know that. Okay.
Yep. They pick places that have cool air.
Makes sense.
Yeah. Rob Gillette did that study probably 20 years ago. It's so cool. He did it for hunting dogs.
Got it.
Yep. So there's lots of signs of fatigue. You may see their head come down. Mm-hmm. Their eyes may, like I said, if they're stressed, they'll dilate. Mm-hmm. Their facial features may come flat. They may be looking for a sign of escape, especially mm-hmm. if like they're on a treadmill or something like that. They'll be mm-hmm. like, this is really hard. I don't know if I can do this. And they'll look around saying, okay, where am I going to go? So it's body language.
Yeah, learning about canine body language in general is something that we all need to do as pet parents for many different reasons. You just mentioned treadmill. Do you recommend like treadmill work, like putting your dog on a treadmill? Are there certain dogs that shouldn't do activity? Because I know it's hard for a lot of people to even get out and walk their dogs after they work. They're exhausted and they want to work out themselves. And maybe your dog does a different pace than you do. Then you have to do like double the workout and you really don't want to do it. So you recommend something like doing a treadmill workout with your dog?
It depends. Okay. So if I have somebody who wants to work with their dog and go walking and stuff like that, it's always better for both to walk than to be on a treadmill.
Sure.
I spent 24 years in Chicago where the winters were horrendous.
Yeah.
Right. So a treadmill there was a wonderful thing. I worked with a lot of police dogs. So this way the police could be studying as they were going through their coursework. Right. Mm-hmm. So I worked with them before they were officially on the force and they would work up to an hour and a half on the treadmill 3 times a week, right, on an incline. Mm-hmm. So if you're going decline, it actually decreases the amount of exercise than if you're flat. Absolutely, your time to strengthen is to be at an incline. Well, it makes sense, right? If you're going at an incline, the weight is shifted back mm-hmm. and the back legs are your muscles or the limbs of propulsion pushing you forward. Your front legs are your deceleration. So if you have dogs that are like agility dogs where they have to wrap around something, right? So they're going up and they have to slow down really fast. Then working the front end is super important. But most of the time what I see with clients is, you know, the thought of how many times when I was in general medicine, people said, "Doc, my dog just couldn't get up anymore, so I put him to sleep."
Yes.
That can stop, right? One of my goals is to stop that.
Yeah.
One of my goals is to take, right now, 80% of orthopedic surgeries in the dog world is cruciate injuries. I would love to drop that to less than 20%. One of my goals.
For those of us who may not know what that means, but have an idea, what is cruciate injuries? Like a ligament or like a...
Great question. So in humans, they call it an ACL.
Okay. Yeah.
Right? So a knee injury where you tear a knee, mm-hmm. but the tear one of the main, it's like a cross. Cruciate means cross.
Okay.
They're one of those ligaments. And in dogs right now, to have that surgery is $5,000 to $7,000. And that's without the rehab.
Wow.
And 50 to 60% of them within the next 2 years will tear the other one.
Wow.
So strengthening the dog's knees, the tendons and ligaments and the muscles around it that support it mm-hmm. are super, super important. Finding inflammation before they tear and then getting rid of it, super, super important to try to decrease the chance of doing that.
Got it. And what are some of the ways that we can get rid of that inflammation without using like, you know, in addition to using, you know, medication, I personally like to use as minimal medication and as I can with Chance. Even at his age, we only use like our Medicams and our Meloxicams, like whenever he's having some sort of a big flare up. What are some of the ways that we can help our dogs with that inflammation in order to prevent some of these injuries?
So one is simple as keeping them lean, mm-hmm. right? So white fat, right? So if you were to look inside the dog and you see fat, mm-hmm. that's actually an endocrine organ. And just the fat, not just the weight of the dog, but the fat itself will create chemicals in the body that increase inflammation throughout the body.
Okay.
Right? Exercise, just exercising, decreases inflammation in the body. Mm-hmm. Right? And then if you want supplements, you can use joint supplements, you know, the whole glucosamine chondroitin thing. If you want to, just one quick tip on that is there was a meta-analysis, meaning one research study that looked at lots and lots and lots of research studies, showed that when glucosamine and chondroitin came from the whole animal, so greenlit muscles or perna muscles, it had a significant effect. When the glucosamine and chondroitin was isolated, so taken out, and you don't have the rest of the coenzymes and the rest of the part of the animal, it did not have the same results. So good quality supplements, and I don't recommend just one. Mm-hmm. I tell people, pick four or five. And it's not like Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, you're on a different one, but you do one bottle of this and then one bottle of that. Because if you're on the same thing all the time, your body doesn't need it, right?
Right.
But if you're on this glucosamine and chondroitin, and this one has devil's claw, and this one has collagen, and this one has, you know, the avocado stuff and all of these different things, then you're getting a whole array to help your dog.
Got it. Now I need to mix up Chance's, some of his supplements, because we've been doing the same one for quite some time. And at what age should we start giving our dogs these supplements? Oh, there's your puppy. What's he doing back there?
He is looking outside. There's to be a crow on my lawn. He may start screaming in a second because he is iced, a Carolina squirrel dog, Carolina mountain dog. And his biggest thing in life is to chase crows and squirrels.
Oh my gosh. That is so cute. He's ready to go. He's ready to go.
Yeah. The other thing I have to say before we get off supplement is omega-3 fatty acids. There is more research on that than any other supplement to help decrease inflammation. And that if you're like, I don't want to do any kind of drug, any kind of supplement, something as simple as sardines or a higher fish diet can get you natural omega-3s. And again, just like with the omega-3s, I recommend, just like the other supplements, I recommend picking four or five different ones and rotating through.
Okay.
Before we move off of omegas, I'm actually curious to get your opinion on this because I've heard kind of mixed things depending on who I speak with. How do you feel about salmon oil versus small fish in terms of sourcing, like for ongoing use?
Not my area of expertise. I don't do sourcing. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I was just curious because I know that some people have concerns with salmon having some level of heavy metal accumulation over time. So when I talk about omegas, I usually just like to mention to people, if you can, try for sustainable sourcing, like small fish, usually from Norwegian waters, or microalgae, because that's another great source that's popping up.
So yeah, I
have other options out there.
Stuff. I have krill oil. I have like Nordic Naturals. I have grizzly pollock oil. So again, staying away more from the salmon. So I agree with you on that, but I don't have as much information as you do.
I think I wanted to ask briefly what at what age we should start. I think we got interrupted by your cutie patootie behind you, but at what age should we start giving our dogs these supplements to help with the inflammation and help with the keep them from getting any sort of, you know, injury if we can?
For me, it's job dependent.
Oh, okay.
Right. If somebody comes to me and they say, I want my dog to be a world team agility dog, we start supplementation at 6 months.
Wow.
If I have a dog that, and again, that's from a study done by Kristen Kirkby Shaw on Adequan, where they took beagles and they took split litters, and half of them they gave Adequan to and half of them they didn't. And then they ran the heck out of them. And then they looked at their cartilage, and the ones that had the supplementation beforehand or as they were going through it had minimal damage to the cartilage. And the pups that didn't had tons of damage to the cartilage. Now, if I have a pet, right, and they're not going to be training constantly, I don't think they need that. You know, and then to me, it's, you know, half-life. So if you have a dog that's expected, like a Great Dane, to live to be 7 to 10 years old, you may start at 5, right? If I have a dachshund that I expect to live to be 15 years old, we may wait till we're 6 or 7.
Okay.
So it kind of just depends upon that. And there's not a problem starting earlier, right? I want my kids to eat healthy too.
Right. Right. And as our dogs age, how do we adjust our expectations for exercise and are mindful of not, you know, overdoing it in our senior dogs? And also being mindful to actually, I think a lot of people just let their senior dogs lie around because, you know, they're like, oh, he's tired, he's old, he's whatever, you know. And how do we encourage people to you know, get up and even do just minimal stuff, keep them moving, you know? What are some of the ways that we can do that? Yeah.
Great, great point. I have some of my clients that come in where, just like you said, they have like, oh, here's my 16-year-old dog and he lays around all day and he may get up. And I'm like, that significantly decreases life expectancy, right? There's studies that show that inactivity and lack of stimulation significantly speeds degeneration of both the brain and the body. So I will start those people, I will start those pets on things like, I need you to walk to the mailbox 3 times a day, right? Or if the client's a stay-at-home parent, it would be 5 times a day. Just walk to the mailbox. And then it may be, you know, some of people like, I don't know if you can because I live on a farm. It may be walk around the inside of the house and then the outside of the house. We have exercises that we can do, like rhythmic stabilization. Again, I hate to bring it in again, but core and more is all exercises that work on stability that are amazing for geriatric dogs, right? So it's nothing pounding. It's the pounding that puts pressure on the joints. It's working on the muscles around it without the pounding and without the shear force that we worry about with knees or hips that help build the muscle to help prevent. And then again, learning new things in humans, something as simple as learning a new language, learning a instrument increases life expectancy and increases significantly increases neurons in the brain.
So like with our dogs, would that be something like a new game or like even walking in a different neighborhood or like, I was just thinking maybe like if your dog is able to get, put them in the car and take them to a different neighborhood. And so they're getting a little bit more stimulation in that way. They're getting some mental stimulation that's different than they're used to.
Absolutely. And if your dog can't walk, throw them in a stroller or a wagon park, and then have them, you know, I'll have clients like with my neuro patients or my really older dogs that will take them to the park and then throw a ball there or throw some leaves around them. And they're like, oh, what's this? Yeah. What's that? Right. Mm-hmm. And excited. And that makes them happy and decreases stress,
right.
Releases endorphins and serotonin and all those happy chemicals.
Right. That's great.
I think I was going to say, I think the other important thing to note with this too is breed differences. So, mm-hmm. you know, professionally, we know that there are certain dogs that are far more prone to slipping a disc or intervertebral disc disease. So like Dr. Lori mentioned, investing in core strengthening early on can be really, really helpful because there's very little that we can offer in terms of prevention coming from a conventional aspect outside of proper weight management. So I think it's another way for people to think about that. Dr. Lori, I didn't know if you had any other comments just along those lines.
I can tell you, again, if you can put this in the notes,
yeah.
I have a book, an ebook that people can get called The Top 5 Exercises for Geriatric Dogs that people can text the word exercise to 1-866-949-0068. And it is my top 5 exercise that are safe for anything from a 16-week-old puppy to a 16-year-old dog. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you when I lecture, the 2 most important exercises, and Lindsay, you probably heard me say this, if I can teach you just 2 exercises, it would be walking backwards and walking sideways.
Interesting.
Right? And that's something you can say, you know what? We're going to feed Fluffy. So Fluffy, you have to start with walking backwards 5 steps and then your bowl goes down. Or Fluffy, you're going to walk sideways from the kitchen to the living room and then back and then your bowl goes down. Or you can be on a walk and say, you know what? Every 5 houses, we're going to walk sideways a house and then 5 houses and then we'll walk sideways the other way. So you can implement exercises into normal daily routine for fun, mental stimulation, and to strengthen the most important muscles to help a dog live longer and decreased chance of injury.
And that's because you're moving muscles that you don't normally use if you're going backwards and sideways, or so you're kind of getting all the, you're hitting all the angles.
So when you go backwards, you're using your glutes and your hamstrings uh-huh. and your calf muscles.
Okay.
So those are the muscles that weaken when the dog can't get up, right? It's the right. muscles of propulsion.
Got it.
Right. It also works the triceps mm-hmm. when they're going backwards, which are the major standing muscles. For the front end. And it's working the brain because they have to think right. about stepping back and where they're placing their feet. Sideways is because a lot of dogs have hip issues or shoulder issues. And walking sideways stimulates and strengthens the muscles that support the hips and the shoulders.
Interesting. Well, that makes perfect sense. Yeah.
But, yeah. Think about old dogs. What's the most common injury I see is they run, 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 and they do a splay. Right? Where yeah. either the front legs go out or the back legs go out, whether they're running, whether they're on ice or a slippery, you know, wood floor or whatever. And by strengthening, by doing side steps and strengthening that, mm-hmm. you decrease that or take it away.
Right. What are some of the common mistakes that we make when we're implementing an exercise program for our dogs?
Weekend warrior syndrome.
What is that?
Right?
Yeah.
That was when Lindsay's nodding. She's like, uh-huh. It's when the client or the pet parent doesn't work with their dog Monday through Friday. And then Saturday comes and they go for a 10-mile run.
Right.
Right.
Right. That would do anybody, human and pet.
So just because you only have time 2 days a week, exercises can be 5 minutes once or twice a day. It can be 20 minutes, 3 times a week. I always tell people, look at your calendar, pick your 2 to 3 busiest days in the week and don't do any exercises that day, as long as they're not right next to each other.
Right.
But then the other days do something, right? Even for humans, they say you have increased life expectancy and health. So we can talk about lifespan and health span. Mm-hmm. If you go for a walk for 25 minutes, 5 times a week, right? So we can take that into the dog world and say, do what we can. The other thing I'll tell you that's really important to know is people say, my dog's overweight, so I'm going to cut their food. Mm-hmm. Well, if we just cut their calories, then their dog is going to use in their normal daily life, they're going to use muscle to supply the calories that they need They're not just going to burn fat. So they will literally lose pound per pound the same amount of muscle as they do fat. But there's research that shows that if you exercise while cutting calories, you lose the fat and you keep your muscle.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Can we circle way back to the beginning when we talked about how you were the first one, the one of the first people or the first people to develop an underwater treadmill for dogs? Mm-hmm. Mostly because I think it's so freaking cute. I know it serves a purpose, but when I've had clients where I've had to take them to, there's a wonderful place not far from me that does like veterinary rehab. And I've just had a few clients, it was many years ago, but I remember the first time I saw all the kiddos in their underwater treadmills. Can we talk, A, how did you develop that? And B, what are some of the benefits of that? I mean, I'm sure it's much like us doing water aerobics, maybe some sort of relieve some of the pressure on your joints. But I would love to hear a little bit more about that because it's really cute to watch.
Absolutely. So underwater treadmill was designed for horses. Oh. Because what happened, there were race horses. So they're very, very expensive. And they would get hurt when they were racing. And then they would have surgery. And then they would be in stall rest. And then they would never come back. So they said, okay, let's take this idea and let's swim them. And this way we'll keep the muscle. But then what they found was when they were swimming them, they came back and they were just as strong and then they would break a bone because you don't have the pounding, which is what strengthens the bone. Mm. So then they came up with the underwater treadmill for horses. And then like, I don't know, 10, 15 years later, they came up with it for people. And then I'm like, this would be perfect for my geriatric dogs. So we had the first one and literally I took a human treadmill. Mm-hmm. I took a jet ski lift. So imagine the crank on a jet ski lift. Mm-hmm. I called the local zoo and said, how do you make your polar bear tanks? And I got the same glass that they use. And I had a pool company come in and it was an upside down cement cup with a right side up cement cup on it. And then, so I had it, so it was only 28 inches high mm-hmm. so that the dogs could a long ramp and get on so that weren't lifting. They didn't have any problems to fall in. We had a security camera that looked through the glass. And then we had a TV monitor. Mm-hmm. So that we could watch while we're working with the dogs, we could see exactly what they were doing. What else? And then we learned that you get from a jet ski lift. If you keep doing that, you get tendonitis in your elbow. Mm. So when we did our new building, a boat lift that could hold literally 3,000 pounds.
Wow.
And it was that. Yeah. So it was, there was just pushing a button. It was much, much nicer. So I actually designed this before there were any of the tanks.
Oh, got it.
And then what happened was I presented at the first international symposium on sports medicine and rehabilitation. Oh my gosh. In maybe 2000, 2001. Something in there. And I had a video of Nala, who was a patient of mine, a Rottweiler who has a tail.
That's Dr. Lindsay, the name of Dr. Lindsay's dog. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Awesome. And in the video, it shows her in the underwater treadmill because we had the camera from the side where she's just dragging her back legs. Hmm. And then I find a magic spot on their tail about a third of the way down. And all of a sudden she starts taking steps. And everyone was like, what? And then, you know, through the years, we learned about central pattern generators and how dogs and cats have these things that can actually create stepping motions, mm-hmm. even if the spinal cord is transected. So we can get what we call spinal walkers, but, you know, clients don't care what you call it.
Yeah.
I've had dogs that have literally broken their back and been paralyzed, no deep pain, and get them back to walking 5 or 6 miles on a trail with their owner. Wow. Because that's what the dog lives for because of this spinal walking. Okay. And it's not going to save everybody.
Right.
But it helps a lot of dogs. And then we saw the geriatric dogs were like taking the weight off their joints, the buoyancy. And then we had our athletes and we're like, look, we can put jets in there. So water and air are blowing at them at different amounts so that we can increase the resistance. So water can be up to 60 times more resistant than air. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you have buoyancy. And then you have hydrostatic pressure, right? So if there's inflammation, the pressure of the water actually decreases. It increases the circulation and decreases the the inflammation and the edema or swelling in the tissue. So it helps so, so many things. And now, believe it or not, they sell more underwater treadmills for dogs than they do for horses and humans.
Oh my gosh. Wow. I hope, did you patent it? Okay. Are there any dogs that you've come across that don't, that are just too terrified to do the underwater? I mean, I know my dog in particular, he's not a fan of water. He'll take a bath, but that's about it. I tried to teach him to swim when we were younger and he was not interested. So, and I know I have some clients who are absolutely terrified of water. Yeah.
I have only had one dog that was a border collie that went absolutely crazy and like flailed, and we couldn't calm him down for anything. But like, there's things like the Samoyeds or the really overweight Goldens. And what they'll do is you put them in the underwater treadmill and they pick their feet up and they go, look, I can float. Yeah. This is so enough.
I was just thinking about a Golden who, a client of mine, once he said that, who passed not too long ago at 15, but he would have loved that underwater treadmill, but he would have probably done the same thing. Like, oh,
yeah,
just floated. Yeah.
But so we work with them, right? So we make the water only carpus or wrist height.
Yeah.
And they have to walk. And then as they are walking, then we slowly increase the height so that it goes up to either the point of the shoulder or the point. So in the underwater treadmill, if you want the most resistance with the least buoyancy, so you want to work this dog, you put the water at, you can't see me, but at the elbow height, right? You don't have the body in the water, so you don't have the buoyancy, but they have all the resistance. Right. In humans, you take your arms straight out and you make little L's with your hands and you touch your thigh. If you are at that height in the water, you're going to have the most resistance without the buoyancy.
Right.
For your old dogs that have a lot of arthritis, we're going to put him at just about maybe a little bit above shoulder height. If you go too high, have you ever been in water up to here and you go up on your tippy toes?
Yeah, right under your chin. You
You can't take long strides. Mm-hmm. You're up on your tippy toes in tiny steps. So you don't want to go too high because then the dogs can't take normal strides. We want them to have nice long strides in the underwater treadmill.
Got it. That makes sense.
Yeah, I can tell you all kinds of tips to work make dogs work.
I have one. My last question is, and I don't know if you have other questions, Dr. Lindsay, but my last question is, what if you have just a dog that doesn't want to exercise? Let's say you got like a bulldog, and then not to generalize at all, you know, English bulldogs are lazy lovers, but they are like, you know, a lot of them don't like to do a lot of work. Or I have a lot that will maybe like pancake, we call pancake. They just don't want to walk. They just, you go outside and they just stand right there and they're like, yeah, no, I'm good. I'm not interested in this. How do you motivate a dog who's unmotivated to exercise?
So we look for what motivates the dog. So I have literally trained dogs to rewalk when they were paralyzed. Mm. We had one dachshund that the only thing he would walk for was coffee. So his owner told us.
That's so funny.
So we took a spiral cup and cut it down, put like a centimeter of coffee in there.
Yeah.
And then we'd have him walk three steps. He would get to go lap, lap, lap. And then we would move it. I had one dog that the only thing he would walk for was caramelized popcorn. It couldn't even be cheese or some other flavor. It had to be caramelized.
Interesting, popcorn. Right.
I had one dog that had no food motivation at all.
Yeah.
But had done agility and loved the tunnel. So we literally put a tunnel up. And then every time she did an exercise, then she was allowed to go through the tunnel, back to an exercise.
Oh, that's cute.
I've had a St. Bernard who had cruciate injury and decided that she was going to die because her knee hurt. And she, at 140 pounds, refused to get up. And we put her on a support. We can put them on like a peanut ball, right? Mm-hmm. A round ball. It's shaped like a peanut. And we rock them back and forth until they realize they can stand. Or in a standing apparatus or a cart.
Yeah.
So that they don't have the ability to lay down. And then we can tickle their toes. Mm-hmm. And it's very, very important that you communicate with the dog, right? So imagine if I like pushed you, you turn around and you'd push me back. But if I pushed you and said, thank you, Charlotte, I so appreciate you taking that step. And then I pushed you and you took a step and I said, oh my gosh, Charlotte, thank you. That is awesome.
Yeah.
And then I push you before I even get to the push, you're going to take a step.
Right.
Right. So working with the dog and praising them for everything that they do right, right. is so, so, so important than just trying to correct them or ignore the things they do wrong.
Right. Positive reinforcement. It works, you guys. It works with people and pets. Yep. Absolutely.
I will do almost anything for chocolate. It definitely works.
That's true.
I don't know how we can talk about this, but the other thing I really appreciated about the wet lab was the way that you just very organically integrate in energy medicine into what you do, because that is so, that really has made a huge difference, like for myself as a person, for a lot of the patients that I've worked with. And I feel like, of course, in the holistic community, it's a lot more accepted, but on the conventional side, you know, they think we're woo-woo and it's just all these terms that they'll throw around, but it is so important. I think probably almost even more important for our animal companions than for humans, because they don't have preconceived notions. They're just open vessels. So I didn't know if you wanted to touch on that at all, because it's very refreshing to see someone that is as accomplished as you that sees the importance in that.
I would love to. Can I tell you the story about how I figured, I won't say I didn't figure it out, how I learned about this, about energy medicine? I always listen to me, it's God, it could be the universe, whatever. Right. Your gut feel, whatever. And I was in general medicine and I was at a great clinic and I had a Parvo golden retriever and everybody thought she was going to die. And it was Friday night. And so we did the responsible thing, right? She can't leave her at the clinic. We were closed for the weekend. So we took her to the emergency, or her parents took her to the emergency clinic. And I kept hearing, you got to go visit that dog. And I'm like, it's a 45-minute drive for me from my house on the weekend to go visit that dog. And I kept hearing, you got to go visit that dog. And I'm like, why would I go visit that dog? It's not going to live. But I had to, right? Deep inside of me. And I'm like, okay, these people don't know me. I've never been to the emergency clinic, but I drove there. I'm like, all right, God, now what do I do? And I had no clue. So I just sat and I just held the dog. I put my hands on the dog. Held the dog and spent like 15 minutes just loving on the dog. And I'm like, did I do what I was supposed to do? I don't know. And I left and Monday morning comes and I'm thinking we're going to get the phone call. Oh, I'm sorry. She passed away. And we get the phone call from the owner. Thank you so much. The emergency clinic told us, I'm going to cry. No. From the moment you left, that dog turned around and got better. And she was up and she lived. And I said, there's something to this. Okay, God, take me, teach me. And I continue to learn. I just learned about, I don't know if you've taken Patrice Korsakis's class on osteopathy, tuning forks. And I am so, so, so excited because I teach part of the pain management course for VIN, right? That people take to get certified in pain management. And I went to, we had a full meeting and I'm like, guys, I know this isn't in the exam, but this is really cool. The things I can do with this tuning fork. And I thought they were going to be like, yeah, no. So, you know, 10 years ago, they were like laser, I'm not sure. And then, you know, 8 years ago, they were like PEMF, I'm not sure. And they were like, all right, Lori, you're on. Learn about it as much as you can with fascia. And by 2025, there will be a lecture including tuning fork with fascia in the VIN pain management course. Tell me that isn't exciting.
That's amazing. And for those that don't know, VIN is the Veterinary Information Network. So it's a really robust resource that we all use collectively professionally to communicate with each other. There's specialists on there, there's general practitioners on there. So that just goes to show that the conventional, our conventional colleagues are putting more weight into a lot of the things that have been disregarded and discredited for a really long time. That's very exciting.
It is. And in fact, we, you know, every year we teach and Jan Huntingford and I have the non-pharmaceutical part of it. And this year they're like, okay, it looks like we want to increase, right? There's more and more people that are wanting to take this course. We want to increase our time. And they asked us specifically, they want to increase palliative care, hospice, which just warms my heart, and more rehab. pain management rehab. And I'm like, that is amazing. Here I thought they're, you know, every year I'm like, oh my God, are they going to say they're going to cut us because, you know, it's not drug related. And they actually increased our time, which again, just warms my heart.
Can we circle back really quickly and explain what tuning fork is? I have heard that term before, and I'd like to know how it applies to veterinary medicine or how it applies to healing.
A tuning fork in general medicine is used if you think you have a bone fracture, and it causes a vibration. So if it's put it on there, the bones vibrate, and you can tell there's a fracture because all of a sudden it's painful. But as I'm learning, there's different frequencies, which makes sense, right? I actually just heard of a research article. I haven't read it yet. I have it on using sound frequencies to treat some kinds of cancer. I'm like, holy cow, that's cool.
Wow.
But this is a tuning fork at a specific frequency that releases fascia.
Okay.
So trigger points, I just for the first time used it on, I had a patient last week that had like half inch thick scar tissue. She licked her tarsus, her hock joint, and the had an ulceration and that's healed, but there's so much scar tissue. It's uncomfortable. And literally we used the laser and got it in half. And then I'm like, let's try the tuning fork. And it got it in half again.
Wow.
So I'm still learning and amazingly cool.
That's super cool. You do sound therapy, Dr. Lindsay.
I do. Yeah. So I have one patient in particular that the reason the pet parent reached out to me was because the dog, because she uses an animal communicator, the dog requested a veterinarian that did acupuncture and sound healing and Reiki. And we happened to connect, and I really should record it. The response that dog has, I'll put acupuncture needles in her, and then I have a singing bowl and a gong and a chime that I play, and she just, her whole body melts. Sound healing is incredibly powerful because, I mean, we all, frequency is life. I think we just don't know enough about it to be able to, you know, say in a conventional scientific way, yes, it's doing this, but I'm so excited that there are studies that are coming out that are helping to support that so that we can give that information to more people because it really is so simple. There's no side effects.
Right?
Yeah. So it is beautiful.
Well, I know what my next episode's going to be. I'm going to dive deeper into this because this is amazing and I'm getting chills like talking about all of this. So, I mean, I know I'm interested in all of those same things for myself. So why wouldn't I be for my pet, right? So
can I take it one step further?
Yeah.
And this may be more than you want to know, but I literally just came out with a course called At Home Laser Therapy, because when I look at, I teach at LSU, the Louisiana State Vet School, and I see these kids coming out and there's not enough veterinarians right now to take care, right? Everybody, COVID, everybody got a dog, right? Or cat.
Yeah.
And then all the veterinarians that were of retirement age were like, I'm not doing this anymore. And they left. They sold their practices. Corporates are buying it up.
Yep.
And I lectured at last year at the Pet Innovation Summit, which is the veterinary field. It was a conference not for the veterinarians, but for the companies that support the veterinary field. So Merck, Amazon, Chewy, a lot of those kind of companies. And one of the big things, the insurance companies, one of the big things they said is pets are the new kids and plants are the new pets, right? So there's not, people are more and more, like my dog, he sleeps in my bed, under the cover. There's many nights I fall asleep holding his paw. His head is on my pillow half the time, right? He is my kids are grown up, right? They're adults now. He is my kid right now.
Yeah.
Right? I want what's best for him.
Yeah.
And the veterinary field isn't there. So again, I work with a lot of agility people and a lot of people whose dogs are their kids.
Yeah.
And I say 50 to 70% of them own a laser. And at the time, zero of them knew how to use it appropriately. So I created this program so that they could learn how to use their lasers.
How do we like ingrain in people how important this is? How important like the being proactive about our the health and wellness of our pets, so they don't, so we're not having to put them down at like 10 because they have osteoarthritis, right? So, I mean, that's a whole other episode, but
it's exactly what you're doing.
Yeah,
you're educating people. You're right. Getting the word out so people understand. One, we can do this,
yeah.
And two, they're not alone. Right. So the more people you have that listen to your podcasts,
yeah.
The more people understand, they realize there's lots and lots of people like them who love their dog.
Yeah.
And it's okay. And we support them. And that's a wonderful thing.
Well, thank you so much for jumping on and doing this with me. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate you inviting me on. This was wonderful. And again, I hope it helps pet parents everywhere. Thanks for doing what you do.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Brewery Podcast. You can pop on over to optimumpetvitality.com to check out some of the amazing resources and courses that Dr. Lori is offering. I've also put the links in the show notes. She's also offering our Brew listeners 10% off her core and more foundational exercises for your dog. You just put in the code BRU at checkout to get that discount. And as always, if you enjoyed the episode, please don't forget to rate and follow the BRU wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also follow on Instagram at BRU Podcast. And if you have a story of canine companionship you'd like to share with me, or a question, or even a comment, I'd love to hear from you. Just email me, charlotte@thebrew.com. All right, you guys, let's chat soon.